RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Now, to the legal business of growing medicinal cannabis. We've been talking quite a bit about medicinal cannabis in the last week or so. So we've invited onto the program this morning Poru Te Fifi Rangi, who is a grower of medicinal cannabis at Rua Bioscience in Gisborne, an ex-illicit or legacy grower entrepreneur who came out of the shadows in 2018 with 23 years of cannabis experience. He's with us now. Morena, good morning, Poru. Thanks for coming on.
Morena, Paul. Thank you for having me.
What was it like coming out of the shadows?
For me, it was a necessity. In that time, there was a lot of talk around the pursuing of cannabis through our local company, Rua Bioscience, who were formerly known as Hikurangi Cannabis Company. And also, we were in the lead up to a referendum. And so coming out of the shadows meant trying to bring the proper education to the people rather than letting the draconian propaganda that we've been used to for decades trying to dictate or sway people's votes.
When it comes to cannabis, is medicinal separate from recreational? Do they cross over? Should we have one and not the other, or both? What are your thoughts on that?
The reality of it is cannabis is cannabis. Whether you call it hemp, whether you call it medicinal, whether you call it recreational, we've been labelled with those terms. And if we look back through history, when cannabis became marijuana or called marijuana, it was used to, ultimately bring that impact upon poor communities around the world. So it was the Mexicans. Then it was the black people, and, we're showing the same trends in New Zealand.
What was it like back in the day, illegally as it was, growing cannabis? What was the risk like? What was the business like? And your experience at that time, be interesting to hear, don't mind.
There's always pros and cons. The pros are the benefits that you can get from whether it's growing, whether it's selling, whether those benefits are to provide for your own family or to try and help with bills. So the hustle is real. In those times, I learned to grow in an area where growing was rampant. And so right. You had these big drug lords and stuff like that. So watching in the scene there, I had to be mindful of how other growers were and their thoughts of having people like me come into their world. And I learned a lot about etiquette and ethics of growers. So we always look at it as the growers are at the top of the hierarchy of the cannabis world. Yeah. Nothing actually goes on before the grower. The grower is the one that grows the plants. Even when we talk about, it's almost like the chicken and egg scenario with the plant and the seed. But the reality of it is the growers were the ones that actually grew the product and then it went out into the markets. Around my history of it, I learned that I had to have a point of difference if I wanted to survive, especially with thousands of growers in New Zealand, or even hundreds here on the East Coast. And learning to have a point of difference, whether it's through genetics or quality or price, those are what caused me to excel in the world that I was living in at the time. Looking back at it all now, I think... I know that it was a necessary step that I had to take in my life. I was banished back to the East Coast at the age of 20. I was like a typical young person just doing dumb shit. Parents thought it was a good idea to send me back to Rotorua. Little did they know it was a haven for growing cannabis. Right. And the skills that I learned there helped me build my family and help us transition along in a place where there's not much work or money, stuff like that. So real big learning curve. And even though I decided never to try go back to my family once I'd been banished, Living amongst our poorest community in Ruatoria gave me the sense that this is what we have to do to survive. It wasn't about trying to buy Harley Davidsons and Ford Falcons, you know, washing machine if we could, help mum with her any of her bills, trying to help some poor families that are really struggling. You know, we were able to gift barter and stuff like that. So the pros really outweighed the cons.
That's really interesting, because what you're just describing there is an alternative, well, economy for a start, but a disconnect out of necessity, obviously, from what the, I guess, other world imposes. And it's a way that you can not be impacted so much by that. And maybe there wasn't too much thought given to that, again, back in the day when it was, you know, gateway drug, criminal money and all of that. But it sounds like there was a way for many families in the situation you're describing to just survive, really.
Yes, that's the beauty of people like myself that went out and done that. And, you know, there have been thousands of families that have done the same thing. You know, the East Coast is not wasn't the only big mecca for cannabis. There was Northland, there was the top of the South Island, the West Coast and stuff like that. So a lot of people were using it to survive. And if we go back through history, when we talk about the history of cannabis back here on the East Coast, we can go back to the times of when it was imported into our country and made it here. But one of the biggest values that we've had is that after the hippies sort of came in and mass cultivated here, the farmers were the next ones to pick it up. And that was because our whole economy had changed here. We had a thriving community that was growing back in its day, barley, straw, all sorts of crops. And then after a period of time, the government came along and started shutting down a lot of our key infrastructure that was making us a bit of money on the coast. And so with that, we saw the urban drift of our people in the 50s.
Right, that's interesting again. Gosh, these things all happen for a reason.
They all happen for a reason. And then because the workforce had left, the farmers were struggling. I mean, the dollar value back then was very poor, so they were getting stuff all, and yet they took a risk to turn towards cannabis to supplement their farming income. That's not all farmers. That's just the ones that chose to take that risk.
Right, but the move out of rural into city, that may have been influenced by, you know, what you're talking about. Okay, so spool through to now, and there's still that division between recreational and medicinal, but medicinal seems to be what, I guess, the majority of people are starting to accept, because they know that they could be in the situation I'm picking, that where they might need that relief, and that tops any concerns about, you know, being treated with cannabis and then suddenly becoming a heroin addict. Obviously, they're not buying that anymore. So moving out of those days into the new environment, and tell us a bit about Rua Bioscience. I've been aware of the company for quite some years, been around, and Manu Kadi, I've seen talking about this over the time as well. So where is, medicinal cannabis, business-wise, how big is the business? What are the opportunities? What is the potential market for it? And how do you, I guess, make the best business out of that now? I know a lot of questions in there, but, you know.
those are very good questions. The best way that I can answer that is we got to look back on where the industry started. And the industry started here in Ruatoria. It started with a trust called Hikurangi Takiwa Trust, who got together a group of people, and I don't know the exact number, but I know it was over 20 to 30 people, who came together to talk about what are the economical options available for the East Coast, and what can we create? And I guess from that, their ended up looking at what were our people good at. So at that time, forestry and farming were the main sort of industries here. And a lot of our people were going to war with the pine trees every day and dying. So not wanting to follow in those footsteps, somewhere in that conversation came out the talk of the illegal stuff our people have been doing and what we're really good at, and that's cannabis growing. So the East Coast, like the Northland, like the top of the South Island, were the predominant commercial cannabis growing areas back in the day. And so from that thought, that Hikurangi Takiwa Trust then sort of formed with, became Hikurangi Enterprises. And through that was spearheaded through Panapa Eho. And Panapa Eho, and with their conversation of hemp, they met up with Manu Kadi, who was a co-owner of a company called New Zealand Nutraceuticals. They then partnered to create Hikurangi Bioactives Limited Partnership. That partnership went out to explore hemp. And so they looked at, you know, the feasibility of hemp on the East Coast, and they supported the local polytech at that time at running a hemp type program, which carried on for several years. And from that initial going out to do hemp, they realized that they couldn't really grow hemp on the East Coast because you had cannabis growers. And there was, there could have been a huge reaction between those growers and the hemp growers for that fact of cross-pollination. So the hemp program decided to change its focus to growing female-only hemp plants. So essentially teaching these students to do the traditional cannabis practice when you grew from regular seeds, which was to pull males and grow a female-only plant. So, yeah. So in all those sort of actions that they were taking, at the time I was in a digger sitting on the hill in Gisborne listening to all this, and I could predict that they were going to go towards medicinal cannabis. And that's where I sort of wanted to jump up and be involved in it. This was still Hikurangi Cannabis Company. They went out and got the first medicinal cannabis license. So essentially Manu and Panapa went out to the Ministry of Health and other government institutions, waited outside their doors between meetings, between lunch breaks and stuff, to talk to them while they're walking to their next meetings to try and entertain the thought of having an industry in New Zealand. From there, we see the industry we have now. And Manu was influential in creating the New Zealand Medicinal Cannabis Council we have now. And also he chaired the Medicinal Cannabis Advisory Board, which essentially made the regulations that we see in this industry. From there, they then changed from Hikurangi Cannabis Company to Rua Bioscience. And from there, they've had to try and operate in an industry that's never been attempted before in New Zealand, well, legal industry, that is. Our people have been very successful at the illegal industry.
Yeah.
And through that, since then, they've had to basically operate within those regulations and legislations around cannabis, trying to get a product to market. And at one stage, they publicly listed, so they went to the NZX. They were the first business that was founded by a Māori community to be listed. And at one stage, the company's value was $100
million. Wow, okay.
Shortly after they listed, the share price rose up.
Yeah.
Now, from there, like there's a lot of gaps in what I'm saying, but essentially from there, Rua got to play, as well as every other company got to play in the legal industry that they created, and it wasn't as easy as they thought. The regulations made it hard to actually try and do something in New Zealand for New Zealand. And so export regulations were brought in to try and give our people, these companies, a chance to export overseas. Now, personally, myself, I was really against that because I thought, you know, we have to get stuff right in our own country first before we try and send stuff overseas. And from there, Rua has created partnerships in Germany with Nimbus Health, in Australia, in the UK, and New Zealand. So those are the four countries that Rua deals with so far. In the past three years, we've had a what we call a pipeline team that's been working on setting up these pipelines in all these countries so that when Rua is ready, we can start doing business with them or using them for whatever purpose we need, whether it's to do cultivation in the country because it's cheaper than here, or whether they are a packaging or GMP facility that can package and get it out to the medicine, out to people in their country. Hmm. And in about 2021, I was approached by the CEO and the chief finance officer, as well as Panapa Eho, who was on the board at the time, and asked if I'd come into this space as a consultant to try and help with the cultivation side. Little did I know the company was going through a huge restructure. And in October that year, they restructured the company from, I think it was like, I don't know the exact number because I wasn't working for them at the time, but it was excessive of 36 people right. That were involved. And I know 24 of those people lost their jobs.
Gosh, that's
as we're restructured. And the restructure was the most important thing that Rua could have done because, like everybody that jumped into this industry, they thought you had to do certain practices, and most companies wanted the whole value chain. Like they wanted to grow from seed to getting the product into market. So trying to do every part of the chain, whether it's cultivation to manufacturing to getting it packaged to sales. And along the way, they realized, hey, we need to just focus on other things that are going to work in this within these regulations that are so hard here. So after the restructure, Rua then went back to focusing on research and breeding. And from there, we've been breeding and going through all the stability trials that we know. Rua has a obligation to get some of these genetics overseas to some of our key partners to help bring in some sort of money. And from there, we're starting to see the sales in all these other countries start to ramp up. So it's been a hard time where there was heaps of money. Then a lot of the regulations that we had to abide by sucked up a lot of that money. And then we realized if we carry on like this, we'd dig ourselves into a hole, and then decided to change the strategy. And the strategy, changing of the strategy, was the best move that they did. They were able to then focus on what were the most important things of being in a business in this particular time. So, a little bit about where they're born and where they come to.
It goes back to what you said earlier. What you just said, to me anyway, it reminds me when you said that it's the cultivator, the grower, that's on top. And that's really what you're talking about, isn't it? That's the core business in the end is growing. And that extends out to, breeding, genetically selecting without GMOs and that sort of thing. But you know what I mean? So that's interesting. Okay, so coming up against time, have you had any grief from any authorities as you've been trying to do all this? Because You know, it sounds like the opportunities are fantastic, but sort of walking this, has there been a walking of a fine line?
No, not really.
Okay.
I've had cannabis convictions. They're now, you know, clean slate. I am.
Well, can I just stop you there? So those convictions are gone now?
Yeah.
Okay, how does that work?
The time has passed between them.
Okay, so there's a timeout, is there? Because I was just thinking, anyone who's been busted for cannabis really should have that taken off their record, shouldn't they?
Yes, definitely. That's what we hope that'll come with, you know, decriminalising or legalising.
Well, it's pretty hard to explain why you would maintain that if it's still affecting or has an effect or is still there, you know.
Yeah. One of the things about the industry when it started was there were claims that people like me would never have a place in it. You know, the government essentially decided we're going to do medicinal cannabis, and instead of giving it to you people that have been doing it for decades, we're going to give it to a bunch of corporates.
Yes.
And that's what they
white did. White coats. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
It's always the way, eh?
Yeah, it's always the way. But in their arrogance, those people that took it on didn't know, you know, much about cannabis, and they struggled. So we've seen all the struggles. But one thing about Rua was that they embraced people with convictions. That was a prerequisite to getting
because you know. It means you know something about it.
Yeah,
so your qualification.
The bigger your rap sheet for cannabis was like, that was your reference.
Yeah,
and
right.
When I first came into meeting with Panapa, you know, he had already had 50 other growers try come to him and try get a job. So, having other people in the community vouch for the growers that did end up in Rua was a huge part of the success of getting the right people in.
Just wind up, Poru, on the future. I mentioned before that that you know when you're talking explaining the life in, you know, very rural New Zealand, Ruatoria at the time, and how that the cash economy that worked from cannabis growing supported families. And that was some kind of disconnect or division. I think we're seeing that in medicine now and health, aren't we? There are a lot of people, and I'm one of them now, I tell you, that doesn't trust the pharma industrial complex, is not convinced that normal health practitioners, GPs, et cetera, in this country, bar a few who have, you know, taken the time to keep themselves educated and to be more informed, trusting that advice is difficult up against the, you know, the pharma thing, and are looking for an alternative way of doing things. It seems to me, and, you know, there's so much anecdotal and solid empirical evidence that, and I know from personal experience, from pain relief, from cannabis, just talking about medicinal, forget everything else, that this could be an answer to so many people who want to be able to kind of make that break but still be able to have some medication if it's required to offset or mitigate against whatever the problem is. And that can be a whole host of things. We probably don't have time to go through my question if I keep rambling on. But that the, you know, the future seems to me to be bright from that angle. Do you think that's correct?
Yes. We're in a time now where people are talking about alternative plant-based medicines. But if we look at the reality of it, we came from that. Back in the day, really the pharmaceutical manufactured medicine has been the alternative medicine. And a lot of our people now, you know, I hear a lot of stories about people on pharmaceutical medicine taking about 20 pills, five might be to counteract the side effects of that particular one pill and stuff like that. So I guess it's we've got to go a long way to finding what can help people get away from that. And there's a lot of people out there who have been using cannabis medicinally for a long time. The clinical trials have already been done, not legally. And we've got a lot of info that can sort of help us move forward in that in the legal space. But our people have been doing it for a long time. They're not sick. No one's dying. But a lot of them need to stand out now so that we can educate the rest of the country about it, because we're still living in a draconian age of propaganda from way back in the day that a lot of our boomers especially, were it was enforced into them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got a lot
not
of work
this
to do.
Boomer.
Well, that's the thing. Like, my mum's a boomer, and her mind's changed about cannabis. And a lot of the boomers will only change their mind once they're on their deathbed, and cannabis is an option to morphine.
Yep, no, that's right.
Many times, or if they have a sick grandchild, where cannabis could be the only medicine that can stop them from having epilepsy. Now, that's the only time we see change in those people that have been anti-cannabis for so long.
Been really interesting chatting with you. Poru Te Whiwhirangi, who is a medicinal cannabis grower at Rua Bioscience in Gisborne. Really interesting. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.